Welcome to the Interviews Podcast. Welcome, Interisti, to episode 122 of the Interviews Podcast, the official podcast of SempreInter.com. We're here for the post-match reaction of Lecce-Inter, which finished 4-0 to the visitors. Goals from Davide Fratesi in the 6th, Lautaro Martinez with yet another banger in the 39th. Dumfries, again, keeps the hot streak going in the 57th. And Mehdi Taremi gets on the score sheet, finally, once again, in the 61st minute. As always, I am one half of your co-hosting duo, Alessandro Raffa, joined here by Johnny Paterno. Johnny, typically I would let you introduce our guest, but I'm going to take it this time through. We brought on that dirty bastard telling me I have no comprehension skills. Ladies and gentlemen, the CEO of Sempre Inter.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Nima Tavali. I'm sorry. It's good to see your face, motherfucker.
Yeah, we hate each other. I read on Twitter, so it must be true.
That's right.
Well, that's why I came on to prove everyone that we absolutely hate each other.
It's just like the Truman Show, guys. It's all just an act playing out entertainment.
It's like, I think what happened was I was frustrated as fuck, and you were frustrated as fuck. We're talking about different things, if I'm perfectly honest. And I think I was pissed off because I was tired with Inter. Not like the results are great. No one can discuss that, right? That's not the point. The issue is I don't like us hanging for the entire, I mean, the number of good games that we've seen this season was Atalanta at home in the beginning of the season. It was City and Arsenal away, where we actually played to the level that we can play. I mean, I'm not talking about 5-0, 6-0. I'm talking about controlling games like we did today against Lecce. A game where Inter imposed themselves, where they were padroni del campo, okay? I've not seen that other than a handful of games. And when you see that kind of over and over, and I didn't say anything all season until Matt after 30 games, and I'm like, well, now's the time to actually talk about this. You can't pretend that it's not like that. Now, I understand that you see other things, and of course, you're like, well, you know, whatever you saw on your timeline was like too much negativity, and I think that's a very good point. Yeah, absolutely. But I wasn't like, I hadn't said anything all season. Like, so I felt like, dude, what the hell? But I also understand that where you coming from, because it can get annoying. It can get annoying when people refuse to just see things for what they are. And that's fine if people are interested in analyzing games and aren't interested in shit like that, but that's, you know, each to their own. So that's all that was. And people can get angry and heated. We all love Inter. We all get passionate. It's not more dramatic than that.
So that's a perfect segue into the cold open question of the week. Obviously, the result was there.
The Nima, performance was there.
The performance. Tell me what you thought.
I saw an Inter that, exactly like I said, that I've wanted to see for large parts of this season. An Inter that came up to this game concentrated, fully focused on the game at hand, fully focused on the task at hand, and imposed themselves from start to finish. Of course they make mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes. That's not the issue. They didn't fall asleep. They didn't look fragile. They didn't hang on for dear life. They didn't look like this kind of deer in headlights look. It was a makeshift midfield. I understand it's Lecce. But I saw an Inter that were in control of the midfield. And I saw an Inter that, despite 2 goals disallowed, which would have, you know, could have disrupted the flow of any team, and they were correct. It was offside. I mean, it is what it is. But I saw an Inter that kept following the game plan and killed off the opponent. And that's what I wanted. That's kind of what I've been missing this season. An Inter that is focused and concentrated and delivers and kills off opponents and doesn't let it affect them. That's what I'm happy about. It was, and you could tell that Inzaghi was relieved after the game as well. I mean, he usually doesn't celebrate like that after a 4-0 win against Lecce, but you can tell there's been tension brewing. I mean, this isn't just, you know, what I said on Twitter was not just my you can tell that it's been affecting Inzaghi too. You know, this is a tricky situation for them. It's also the fact that it's Antonio Conte at Napoli, the predecessor. These things add spice. You know, these things are also factors. And it's now what Inzaghi said before the game. I loved his pre-match interview. I don't know if you guys saw it. The thing he said about, listen, now is make or break time. February, March is when it's decided. Enough talk. Go out there and listen. Go out there and perform and show who we are. And that's what they did. And that made me really, really happy. Really happy. They didn't break too sweat, you know, spend too much energy. They were controlled. I loved that he brought on Bisek at halftime and center back. You know, there's only one negative, but we'll get to that later, which I think everyone shares. And I think, and if Gianni's going to be a rat, which I don't think he is, I had a bit of a meltdown in our safe space group chat. But I think I share that with everyone who listened, who watched that game, because why did you play Barella?
We're absolutely, absolutely going to get into that. But before we do, Nima, I think you summed up performance-wise from the team. I think you summed it up really well. I think the only period where it was poor was right out of the gate in the second half when Lecce, you know, understandably so, really went for it. And we looked like a little bit frazzled. You could see it in the way that Sommer was reacting to the defense as well. But Johnny, what I want to ask you, Nima's touched on a lot his problems with the performances from Inter recently, or maybe all season, have been around this midfield and their inability to establish the same control that they had last year. I was nervous with a Zielinski, Fratesi, Mkhitaryan pairing in the center of the pitch. What did you see from the midfield today? I saw a couple of really good performances, but what did you think of the guys?
It's so nice to finally be able to speak after 7 minutes of this of you guys being able to talk, you know, just nonstop. That's fantastic. I think it's the longest I've had to be quiet ever in my life. So this is it was very difficult for me. What did I see? Listen, not to be, you know, throwing people under the bus, but I saw much more progressive midfield where they were able to push the ball forward. There wasn't really any mistakes in the middle of the pitch. You know, certain someone who might be playing Regista, you know, tends to lead to. So, yeah, I mean, I understand it's Lecce. It's not like we were going up against, you know, Milan or Napoli or, you know, even Lazio right now with the way that their midfield has been playing. But it felt totally in control. I never, except for that, you know, brief maybe 10 minutes at the start of the second half, I didn't really feel like we were under attack. I felt like everybody was cool, calm, and collected, as cliche as that is. I liked what I saw from Zielinski. I thought he played, you know, a flawless game personally. Fratesi, for the things I don't like about him, he did everything I do like about him today. So like that was fantastic. And obviously getting on the score sheet as quickly as he did, I think that makes, you know, at least, obviously it's a different profile from Barella. We all know that as Interisti, but to see him, you know, continue to excel at what his strengths are, it's very promising. And you know, obviously I think that he's someone that if we're able to hang on to, you know, maybe you are able to rotate and give Barella more rest, which we could clearly see he needs. I mean, I don't think anyone would disagree with that. So if Fratesi still is able to get in the box and get on the end of goals and really relieve some pressure off of Lautaro and Thuram, I think that's huge. So, yeah, no complaints from that starting midfield three. Even Mkhitaryan, I really can't say anything bad about him with his performance today either. So, yeah, all three of them were awesome.
Agreed.
Nima.
Agreed on everything.
Zielinski may not like playing the position.
As he likes to say, every chance he gets.
Every chance he gets. He reminds us that he's not an Regista. But after today, pretty clear that he's the second best Regista at the club.
I think there's no discussion about that. I mean, he may not like it and he shouldn't have to be there, playing there. But at the same time, look, it's Lecce away. And if you want control, you know, there were times where you can tell that, you know, it's not his natural role and he was out of position. And so Lecce were creating numerical advantages coming, you know, where they played past the press. that's fine. I mean, this was emergency. Inter are in an emergency. I think, was it 4 games in a row or 3 games in a row that Aslani had played? And he'd not done very, he hadn't pressed in any of them. I want to just touch on this Aslani thing so we can like move on. Because I think my perspective on Aslani is he's a classic regista. In the sense that he's not very dynamic. He's a good passer. He's got great vision. I actually think he can do something if he plays in a team that uses a midfield that's more suited to how he plays. I look at it that for me, the Inter, the most demanding and challenging and difficult position in the Inzaghi system is this three central midfield position, because you have to do everything. You have to be able to do a minimum level of everything. What do I mean by everything? Your passing has to be good. Your creativity has to be good. Your crossing has to be good. Your movement has to be great. You have to read, your positioning has to be great. You have to have physicality. And you have to have physicality and also presence, in the sense that you have to be a good ball winner. You have to do a little bit of everything, all three roles, because they move positions so much. So sometimes Mkhitaryan's the regista, sometimes Barella is. Like that, Çalhanoğlu, like all of them, right? That's how it plays. Aslani has zero dynamism, zero physicality. And that's a problem, because he slows Inter down. And that's why he struggles at Inter. So for me, I look at him, I actually think he's a good player. And I know that if Inter get rid of him, he's going to do well somewhere else. He's going to do really well, I think, if Inter were to go to Torino and say, here's Aslani plus 20, 30 million, I think Torino would jump at that, because they would get a really good replacement that they can develop. He's young. And I think he would do really well there. I think he would do great at a Fiorentina. I think he would do great at Lazio under Baroni even. I really think so. But regardless, he doesn't work in Inzaghi's system. It's just that simple. With Fratesi, conversely, who has dynamism, who has physicality, but has no passing and no technique, you can mitigate for that with the other two, because he moves a lot. Do you know what I mean? So you can mitigate for these things, although I don't think he's ideal either. And I think what we saw today is essentially him being very professional and saying whatever problem there was, they handled it, basically saying, and I don't know if you guys saw his post-match interview now, he said, I'm happy at Inter, I don't want to leave, which made me really happy as well. So that just suggests to me that they're being professionals about it. Let's talk at the end of the season. Let's take this season to home, to its conclusion. Everyone, you're going to get your chances. I'm going to show that I care. Let's postpone this 6 months' time, which I think is a testament to his professionalism and how good Marotta is handling a squad. But regardless, for Aslani, just to end that, guys, it's not like he doesn't work in the system. He just doesn't.
I just Nima, while you were talking there, I just shared a video of Zielinski under pressure and being able to, you know, keep his composure, something that I don't think that we typically see from Aslani. So listen, if it's a big game and Hakan can't make it, let's say the Milan derby, for some reason he's not recovered, you have to put Zielinski back there with Barella and Mkhitaryan. It just has to be done. Johnny, off of what Nima was saying about, you know, Fratesi in his post-match stating he wants to be here, obviously he made a statement today on the field. Who's to blame for this whole month playing out the way that it did? Because it didn't need to get here. He's a talented player that has shown it most of the time that he's taking the pitch, not every time, that it just didn't need to come to this. So now that it looks like that saga is coming to an end and we'll deal with it in the summer, who's your biggest, I don't know, who do you have the biggest beef with how this went down in January?
Who are you angry at, Johnny?
Who am I angry at? I mean, where do we start? There's Julian. No, sorry. It's got to be Beppe Riso, right? Like, the only way that this story probably even comes out is because the agent's leaking this stuff to, you know, to the papers. So,
Auxilio said as much, didn't he? I mean,
that I mean, yeah.
Sorry, but
he's, you know, I mean, that was probably the best.
He loves to talk.
Like, he's an agent that's very simpatico. Yeah,
yeah. Like that's the most backhand compliment I think you could have paid to him, and it was so obvious. So. But like,
I don't mean in a bad way. But you sit in the slot. Like, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I don't mean in a bad way. Like,
pretty much the same thing. Yeah, I mean, exactly. Like, I hope that gets him to shut up, though. you know, at least till the summer. You know, like, you see that we're in a title race. You see that we're actually competing for trophies, unlike Roma, no offense to them. You know, I don't think they're a real threat in the Europa League. I don't think that they're clearly not a threat for the Scudetto. So it's like, why would you want to force a move for a player who has a chance to really be competing for and actually play an integral part? I'm not saying he's going to be, you know, an everyday starter, of course, but he will have his moments and he will have his opportunities to have an impact on matches. So it's like, what reason are you leaking this or starting this type of trouble? So he's the only person I have a beef with. Obviously, Fratesi handled it well. I think the management did. Inzaghi did as well. You know, like, hey, like, here's your chance. Make the most of it. And what did Fratesi do? He did. You know, he took it by the scruff of the neck. And, you know, I was thrilled with the way he played. So, yeah, the only person I have any beef with is Beperi. So he's, yeah.
What's your expectation for the rest of the season with Fratesi? Obviously now, you know, they've made this push for the minutes. He's performed the way he's performed. Do you think he has a legitimate shot at getting more play time?
I mean, if you look at what just happened to Barella this game, yeah, I feel like you have to, you know, let him have a legitimate shot of having, you know, an actual spot in the starting 11 more often. You know, it's funny. I was having a conversation with, I mean, I'm going to keep name dropping him because he's the new manager at our club, but having an actual conversation about Nocerino and or with Nocerino, and we were talking about the profile of midfielders that he likes. And aside from saying that, you know, Scott McTominay is his favorite midfielder so far this season, he did go on to say that he likes players like SMS, like a Fratesi, who can get on the score sheet. You know, he thinks that that's very important for a midfield. You could have all the other characteristics, but if you're able to bag in goals and timely ones, that is meaningful to him. And that's the kind of profile of a midfield that he wants, you know, in his starting 11. So he actually says that for certain games, not all, but for certain games in certain instances, he would actually prefer a Fratesi to a Barella, which, I mean, me being the biggest Barella fanboy was a little upset hearing that initially. But when he gave his explanation, you know, I can understand it. And obviously, he played the game. He played it at the highest level. So if anyone's going to understand it or know what they're looking for better than me, it would be someone like him. So to hear that and to hear how he holds him in such high regard, you know, that kind of put a little change in my mindset and attitude towards Fratesi. So.
Okay. I think it's time. Nima, I'm not going to even frame a question here. I'm just going to throw out a topic and let you run with it. The topic is Barella being subbed on with it was already 4-0 at that point, right? 3 or 4-0 lead.
It's this thing. Sometimes this is a cultural thing. This is an Italian coach thing. This is it's not an Inzaghi thing. This is unfortunately a cultural thing. They do this. There is no need. There was no need under any circumstances to bring on Nicolò Barella when it's 3-0 up. There's no need for it. There is literally no need for it. Especially after you've seen how tired he is and you know how fundamentally important he is with Monaco and Milan and Fiorentina and Juve coming up. You need to micromanage Nicolò Barella. You wrap him in cotton. You wrap him in whatever bubbles. Like you don't, like plastic bubbly squishy things. You don't risk him away on a potato farm of a pitch in Lecce, Antonio Conte's hometown. I mean, you just don't. And the thing that pissed me off the most is after that, they continue to play him. At that point, we're 4-0 up. That is just, I don't care. You finish the game with 10 men. You're 4-0 up against Lecce. There is no need to play Barella for the remaining 15 minutes. There isn't. You go to a 4-4-1. You can play that. You do whatever you need to do to end the game in 10 men, and you rest Nicolò Barella. It's just, And Inzaghi is not alone. You know that if Spalletti was at Inter, he would have done the same. You know that Conte would have done the same. You know that Allegri would have done the same. You know they all would have done the same. This is it's a cultural thing, and it's.
But would Thiago Motta have done the same?
Yeah, I think at this point, I think he would have. To be honest, he's in so much deep shit. I think he would have played. No, but it's like it's just unnecessary. And I know that every single Interista was sitting there going, "Why?" It's just unnecessary. It's just again, risk reward. 3-0 up, Lecce. Why? Like,
can I ask you to pick up your lawyer's briefcase here and try to make the case for why Inzaghi would have made that?
I know what they're thinking. I just disagree with it. The idea is, well, you want to keep, you know, you want to keep your players having at least 10 minutes in to keep them still kind of, you know, in that match tempo. And with 3-0 up, it shouldn't, you know, you should control the game. You need to see out the performance. You want to end the game in control, blah, blah, blah. I get that. But this isn't September. This isn't October. We're in the middle, like you said yourself before the game. It's February and March that decides the Scudetto or decides the entire season. You know, I wouldn't even go as far as the March. For me, it's the next 3 weeks. It's Monaco, Milan, Juve, Fiorentina. Those are the games that are going to decide the season. Because at the same time, Napoli are playing Roma. I think they're playing Lazio and Udinese. Like, you know that after that, if they continue winning like this, you know, then you're forced to beat Napoli at the Maradona, right? So you need to just keep up the pressure on them and keep the players fresh. And Barella, again, I, if this was a tight game, I would have played. But it was 3-0 up. And what's worse is, when he gets injured, you're 4-0 up. Like, ugh. Like, it drives me up the walls. The risk-reward, dude. Finish the game with 10 men.
Yeah. That's I agree. I would have just pulled him. It obviously he jumped back on the field. Wasn't, you know, super hobbled, although it did look like he was reserving himself a little bit. Johnny, when you see the knee on knee there, what's going through your mind?
Well, quick update. Inzaghi did just say there's no need to be alarmed about Barella. It was a blow to the knee, but it doesn't seem like there's any problems. So I'll take that. I'm okay with that now, hearing that, of course. But I'll be honest, even when it happened, when you look at the way the knee bends, I've had that happen on turf. That ended up being an MCL sprain for me. I was out 6 weeks. just looking at the way that his knee, like, just buckled back there, that was a scary one. Now, I know knee-on-knee ones, it could just be a really bad stinger, which is what I was hoping it would be the case. But when you see the impact and the speed that he was able to got into that collision, it just did not look good. I immediately was pissed off because I was like, why? Well, there was no need for him to be in this game, just like you were saying. Absolutely no need. I when we talked last week and we were saying, like, oh, hopefully we'll be up 3-0, so then you don't ever have to play Barella in this game. And then I see Barella coming in. I'm like, why? Why? Like, this was literally what we were talking about on last week's episode. And I just don't get it. You should not put players like that at risk. You know, even leaving Thuram out there, I was like, why aren't we putting Arnautovic in on this match? Like, what reason are you leaving Marcus Thuram out there for on a 3-0 game? And I think obviously at that point it was already 4. Like, there was just it made no sense to me whatsoever. There was something I said to Nima and in our group chat and I forget what it was now about the knee on knee, but like it just made no sense. It made no sense. Like, what possible benefit was there for him to get 20, 30 minutes, whatever it was? I forget what point he came on the match, to be honest, but the negatives outweigh the benefits every step of the way.
Like, that was the reward. That's the thing that drives me insane. Like
cool. Like, let's say he assists on a goal and then he, you know, gets his ankle cut up by a player coming in with a clumsy challenge and now he's got a dislocated foot. Like, would it have been worth it? Absolutely not. And I think everyone would agree that, you know, a Bastoni, a Di Marco, like, you let Di Marco rest for 90 minutes. Why couldn't you let Barella rest for 90 minutes? I just don't get it. This was the type of stupidity that, like, this was something I would expect Stramaccioni to do. You know what I mean? Like, that's the level of dumbness. Not that, you know, I don't think Inzaghi's the worst man.
Played Berenbrook.
He probably would have, but I'm saying, like, a manager with that little of experience at the highest level, that's something you would expect him to do. I just don't get it.
Just to build on your point, the thing, like, the thing that stresses me the most, Johnny, is just the how needless it is. Like, it's so unnecessary. Yeah. Like, it's just pointless. Like, again, you saw, we all know, if Barella suffers an ACL, that's it for Inter. Finished.
Without question.
Like, I mean, everybody knows this. So, and you saw the look on everyone's faces standing around him.
Bastoni looked like he was about to cry.
Literally about to cry. Like, he's the most important player on that team. It's just, you know,
The only 2 minutes management things that needed to occur today was Barella didn't need to play at all, given the game situation, obviously. And the second one was De Vrij being taken off at halftime. There was no need for him to give 90 today, especially what he's been doing. So you get one right, like, you know, just follow through and get them both right. Get them both right so that we don't have 2 of our most important players in this last stretch even being up to potentially get injured.
I got a question for you guys, though, real quick. Do you think the fact that Palacios didn't see the pitch once again, he's gone on loan this month, probably?
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty much.
He wasn't even called. I don't think he was even called up.
I didn't even pay attention to that.
I think it was a fever. The official reason was fever or something, I read.
Okay.
Which fever. Looks like he might be heading to.
Yeah, like me before in high school, before a chemistry exam.
Exactly. Yeah.
Fever.
Yeah. Looks like he's on loan to Monza.
To Monza.
We can talk about that at the end of the pod here. But the Barella potential injury wasn't the only controversy during this game. There was a potential penalty not given. Nima, I know how you feel about it. Before you get into it, I just want to give my side. I think Johnny also agrees with me. For me, hands clasped behind the back, and then as soon as Lautaro plays it across the box, he lets go. And you can see, I'm sharing my screen here, you can see that he's dropping his shoulder towards the ball. For me, penalty. What are your thoughts there?
Me or Johnny?
You.
Okay. So the thing is, if you look by the letter of the law, the way that they look at it is it's deliberate and whether it's in an unnatural position. It's not in an unnatural position, but you can definitely argue that it's deliberate because if you look at, I mean, we don't even need to go into whether it's above shoulder level or it's not. It's he doesn't make his body unnaturally bigger. It's not. He doesn't make within the definition of unnaturally bigger. He doesn't. You know, he's got his bike. The only thing that even causes some discussion is exactly what you said. The fact that he,
you can see him leaning into it.
Was that deliberate or not? Well, I think you can argue that it is deliberate. But the thing is, I think penalties when it comes to handball, I like that they're a little bit stringent, in the sense that because there's been so much confusion and back and forth, and they've changed the handball rule so much, I want to keep it somewhat because. I get your argument and no one can say that you're wrong. I just feel that I need it to be more clear. For me, that is, it's still by his side. Do you know what I mean? Like it's too close to his body for me for that to be a penalty. If that makes sense by the interpretation of the law that referees have told me and that I've had explained to me, I wouldn't have complained. It's in the gray area, but I mean, I just think that I wouldn't, it's a controversial call to give because the referees always say they don't want to give Rigorini. They don't want to give, that's in the gray area. But I think your point is absolutely true. I mean, there is there, you can't say that it's not deliberate when he drops his hand and put, I mean, come on. Like, of course it's deliberate, but it's still so close to his body. It's not, I don't think you can argue it's in a non-natural position either. And I don't think he really makes his body unnaturally bigger either. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think it's one of those,
Yeah. Johnny, I want to get your thoughts on this, but I also just quickly want to contrast this incident versus the one with Gatti yesterday against Napoli, where, in my opinion, that felt a lot more like arm in a natural position. Absolutely. Whereas Absolutely. This feels, just looking at the video, you can see he's dropping his body yeah. towards the ball, which is a natural inclination for a defender. It's just that his hand is making the motion towards it as well. So, exactly. Johnny, what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm glad I finally get to speak again. This is it's getting a little ridiculous here. You know, we're letting the host of Studio Vesuvio kind of take over the ship here, and I think we need to steer it back on course. But no, I totally understand what Nima's saying, and to an extent, I can see it. However, for me, like, and I agree with you, Alessandro, like, yes, like the way he's dropping his shoulder, if he kept his hands clasped behind his back, dropped it, and then it hit his arm, I think I would be like, well, he's really not trying to, you know, yeah, like, you can't call that. Yeah. This one, because he lets it go, and because you clearly see he's putting it in the path of the ball. And to me, that's deliberate. I don't think that's accidental yeah. in any way. To me, it is a penalty. Now, if he would have been I forget who took the shot for Napoli yesterday, but if he would have had the closeness of distance that one was with Gatti, then I would say, okay, you can't really call that a penalty either. But because of how far away Lautaro is, in my opinion, you know, it would have been a penalty. I'm not infurious or I'm not furious. Did I just make up a word?
You did.
Okay.
We invented a word today. I like that.
I can do what I want in the United States of Donald Trump. So get off my back, please. I'm not as upset as other people probably are, and I'm not going to, you know, cry that the refs are out to get us, because we did get one, rightfully so, later on in the match. Now, if that one wasn't called, I'd be screaming from the mountaintops. You know, the mountaintops that this is collusion now at this point, but you know, so
yeah,
and it would have been, you know, I guess, I don't know, you know, Juntoli League or something. I don't know what you would have called it, but yeah, it's like Nima said, it's kind of in the gray. Like, I'm not, yeah. I think it's a penalty. Am I upset it's not called? Not really, because we're already winning, and I didn't think Lecce would really, you know, have a stand a chance, to be honest. Now, if that happens in the game. Role. Yeah, I think that plays a big role. Like, if it happened in a 0-0 game, you know, against Napoli, then I probably would have been even more upset. You know, like,
and you have to review it too.
That's another thing. Like, did they?
They did. Yeah, they always review.
What I don't understand is why we don't, as a viewer, get that replay on our feed. Probably, like, why is it coming up on videos on DAZN on Twitter as opposed to?
I'm so glad that you mentioned this, because this is something that I am pissed off with Inter. They always do this. When these situations happen, instead of continuing to play, put the ball out of touch. But instead, the game went on.
Yeah, like, it literally, at that point, I really thought, like, you can't go back and look at it at that point when play finally stopped. So,
if you think
a penalty should be called immediately as soon as you get the ball, boot it into the. I don't care if you hit a kid in the face with that ball that you pumped into the stands. Like, just get it out of there.
And the way Lautaro reacted, you would think that one of his teammates would have the wherewithal to just dump it.
Yeah.
No, yeah. But I think it's one of those Inter things. They decide that they don't want, you know, I just think they've decided that they're going to play.
We're too nice.
Yeah, enough of this nice shit.
Yeah. I'm tired. I don't want to be nice the gentlemen of Serie A. I want to be the scumbags of Serie A. I want everyone already does hate us. So yeah, it's like, we might as well lean into it.
We might as well play the part.
Yeah. You want us to be the villain? We'll be the villains now.
Douchey thing to do. Just kick the ball out of touch. Let the referee communicate with the VAR. And then if he says it's not, fine, you continue play. We're talking 30 seconds.
Who was the official on replays? I forgot.
I don't know who the official on VAR was. I can't remember. Let me have a look.
Yeah, okay. I really do think that the game state plays a role there. Had it been, you know, a big match against a tough competitor or direct head-to-head, like, Interisti would be rightly losing their mind that wasn't reviewed. but obviously it didn't come back to bite us. We're 30 minutes into this. Let's talk about some of the goals that we saw today.
It was Marco Di Bello.
Yeah. See, that's that. I thought I heard Marco that name. Yes.
Marco Di Brutto.
And we know, and we know how he feels about us. So
that's Berlusconi told him.
All right. 1-0 Fratesi goal. We're showing the video of Thuram absolutely skinning. I think that's Baschirotto to play it off.
Do not blame my muscular farmer for that mistake there. Okay.
Well, Johnny, let me kick this over to you. Best piece of individual brilliance from an Inter player for a goal this year? Yes or no?
Damn, that's tough because I got to remember all the goals that were scored. Are we talking about just dribbling brilliance?
I don't think we've seen a take on this year that absolutely spun. No,
we haven't. Yeah. We haven't. So yes, in terms of dribbling, for sure. The best piece of individual brilliance, this season. And this is what I want Thuram to do more often. Like, just go at your man. Like, look at how many penalties he drew last season, right? By just going and attacking his man. Do it. Either you're going to get beat him like you just did, or they're going to commit a foul and we get a penalty. Like, just go for it.
And to have the wherewithal, like, to play it off to Fratesi instead of taking the shot.
The run that Fratesi makes into the box, like, holy cow. Like, this is why I've always said that he should be a second striker. I don't see him as a midfielder. I think that he should just play in the box and play as a second striker because it just doesn't feel like it's a part of his game. Being a midfielder, that is.
Yeah, I think a huge part of the reason that he's able to find the space is because he is coming from midfield and not being tracked up front by the defense, like playing that role, breaking into the box while you're already causing the defense to have to keep track of two forwards in the front line, I think is really, I mean, actually, you know, Fratesi has really high potential in this Inter team if Inzaghi wants to exploit that more. Nima, another brilliant piece of skill from Thuram. Didn't have, you know, the greatest game overall. We went back and forth about this a little bit in the lead up to this game. What would be your percentage chance that Thuram is going to be on the Inter roster for the 2025-2026 season?
Damn, we're going dark already?
It's not dark. It's not dark. It's we're talking.
And then the best part is you ask Nima Negativa over here, who's gonna spin it in the most negative way possible. It's just gonna be doom and gloom. It's gonna be doom and gloom.
Johnny, we've officially changed the name of the podcast from Interviews to Infurious. Okay, this is what I asked the questions for.
Infuriate
everybody, Nima. Tell the people what the
I look at it, like I said it, if you guys remember, I said it already in the summer because, you know, he would have been at Inter for like two seasons. He signed a 5-year contract. He came on a free transfer. He has a clause. You know, it depends on what happens. I think if Inter win the Serie, if they win the Champions League, he'll leave for sure. I think that'll be like, I want to try my wings elsewhere because he will have won everything with Inter, you know, and players love to have goals, right?
But like, where do you go? All right, sorry, I'll let you finish.
So I think if somebody like, you know, if a PSG comes in or a Real Madrid or, a, you know, something like that, you know, because I mean, you think about it, he's teammates with Mbappé, you know, in France, there's that connection. And he is very, you know, I don't think it's a very high percentage. My issue is that I want Inter to be prepared. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If it happens, I don't want us to find ourselves like that summer with Lukaku and that ridiculous drama and it ends up with Arnautovic, right? I just don't want us to find ourselves in that position. For me, I think you need to basically look at this like, he can offer a ginormous plusvalenza. Like, he came on a free transfer. I think the clause is 85, 90 million. That is a huge plusvalenza. And between him, Aslani, and Fratesi, that's like 140, 150 million euros. You can get Retegi. You can get Nico Paz. You can get somewhere.
No. I didn't know you were going to go this direction. Zadegi. Hold on.
No, but
hold on. Like, now yeah, I'm listening.
Like, because Atalanta, you know, he's not going to. Atalanta paid, I think, 20, 30 million. I can't remember how much they paid for him last summer. Right?
25, yeah. I think. Yeah.
25. Given his age and who he is, I mean, they're not going to. Yeah, 50. There's no the Premier League. I don't see any Premier League coming in for him. So he's going to stay in. And I'd rather he go to Inter than he go to Juve in that situation. Because Juve, I think, is probably.
Without a question.
Like, yeah. So if they
sell Vlahovic, that's probably where that money's going to.
That's going to go. We all know that. Like, it's not even a secret. Like, we know how these things work. So if that situation is, I want Inter to be proactive and basically say, okay, by this date, we need to know. After this date, you're not going anywhere, and adapt the contract accordingly, right? So that you don't do that.
Do they have a release clause expiration date in the contract?
I think I read somewhere about the first 15 days of July, some shit like that. I can't remember exactly. I think right now Marotta always likes to put expiration dates because he wants to control his market. He doesn't want to. Because you can't. I mean, think about it. You know, and it's one of those situations where you have to plan your summer, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, would you, you know?
I mean, so, I would say, I hope it's like July 5th, the latest type thing.
I think it's mid-July.
The only thing I worry about with that is that cuts it close to the start of preseason. And then, you know, like, if it's the 15th, it is what it is. But I would rather do it earlier. Sorry.
Yeah, I agree. But to be fair, Johnny, I think that next season preseason is going to be late because you play the
Club World Cup. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah.
I think the final is in July 14th or something like that, or 13th. I can't remember. 10th, something like that. It's pretty
late. It might be even later. Yeah. Because they start on the 18th or the 19th. I think.
It's like 4 weeks after, like into July. So, you know. So whatever. But regardless. I'd like to see Inter prepared and people are like, well, Thuram is not the same player as Retegi. Yeah, thank you very much. I know that. But that's not the issue. The issue is Lautaro, I think this season, has shown that he likes to move about. I don't want him languishing in the box. You need with Retegi, someone said, do you think Retegi and Lautaro can play together? Yes, I think so. Very, very much so. Very, 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 very much so. Because Retegi, if he's, you know, my position on him before he joined Atalanta this season was he's a goal scorer. He's a fox in the box. He's fantastic in the air. My question marks around him was his link-up play, his movement, his pressing. Well, I think after 6-7 months of a certain Gasperini and his vitamins, we've seen that he can do that. You know, the Flintstone vitamins in Bergamo are really, really strong. So, he can
Pasquinotto takes those, by the way. Unfortunately, they're not helping his football skills. But
pigs that are like on those, like he squeezes those out of the pigs and puts them in bottles. But regardless, I look at him like that, and I see him and Lautaro, and I think that they can work really well together. And you got Taremi already there, who I think is going to rehabilitate himself and do well. I wouldn't even, you know, and then you look at the midfield. Well, you need Nico Paz. Inter need Ricci and Nico Paz. And if you get rid of Aslani and Fratesi, Nico Paz and Ricci coming in, you know.
Still upgrades.
I mean, let's be honest. And they suit Inzaghi's football. So then that even leaves money over to do something with the defense. But, you know, because Acerbi's going to leave. And we need to do something about that. And I think Tejon is probably going to leave too, which I think is a shame. I think that bone, that fracture really destroyed his Inter career last summer. But,
yeah,
you know, so I look at it like that. So I'm not hoping this happens. No Interista hopes Thuram leaves. He's brilliant. And in this system, he's fantastic. But you got to be... I just don't want Inter to be caught with their pants down. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's my favorite kind of Inter, but John, well, let me
kick with their pants on. That's your favorite kind of Inter.
With their pants down. Johnny, kicking it over to you for Inter's second goal. Lautaro with a weak-footed banger. Is he officially back? Is that the kind of thing that you say? Okay, he's in his bag now.
How many times are we going to say this man's back? Like he's been back.
Yeah,
the confidence is there. Obviously, if he's taking it with his weak foot, he is feeling it.
Terrific goal.
I mean, stunning finish. Like
world class. That's the only thing I have to say from
him. Like, he is... My goodness.
I mean, it's not just the goal. The back heel for Dumfries, the link up, the movement.
I did not see Auxilio's reaction. I love it.
He lost it. Yeah, he lost it.
I love it. My goodness. Yeah. I don't know what happened. I don't know if Agostina did a little something back at the house and brought him back during the holiday season. Like, listen, maybe Christmas came early. You know what I'm saying? At the Martinez house. I'm just saying he looks in. I know what that, you know, that bump is like. I know what that is. So confidence is back. You're feeling it. Good for him. But now the thing that I want to see is that Thuram is continuing to play the way he was playing. Because once again, now you're seeing Lautaro score, but you're not seeing Thuram score as much. And it's like, I want them. He did. And I want them both to be clicking at the same time together, because then we just become unstoppable. Like, I don't think anybody would be able to beat us if they're both going. So.
And with the derby coming as well, like.
And although we do know Thuram likes to score against Milan, so.
You know, Lautaro does as well. I mean, but regardless, we need them to. Like, that game for me is imperative. It's especially the style there. Like, it's.
Psychologically, it's imperative given the first two results of the season.
Exactly. And the manner of which the second result happened, where you collapse within 35 minutes from two goals up. And it's like, you don't need to do that. You don't need to give them that kind of boost. And then after everything that happened today as well with Conceição, because I think he's so smart. I think he knows exactly. Let me just put it to you this way. I'm going to explain this tomorrow on the Italian Football Podcast, why I think Conceição did what he did. But let's just say that it's not by chance that he goes against Calabria like that. That's the way I see it. He knows exactly what he's doing.
The captain.
Yeah, the cap, exactly. Someone who he's not happy with. So he knows exactly what he's doing, and he wakes the team up. And they're, you know, this is what Conceição does. He's a mentality monster. And I want the air to go out of them. You know what I mean? I want to fully kill Milan at home, or when they're at home. Because then that's it. Because that'll give Inter a huge boost. Then you got Fiorentina, Juve. At some point, you got Fiorentina again, 70 minutes. And then we can put the stupid asterisks apart. But first, Monaco. You know, you win that game, draw that game, top eight sorted, brilliant, we're done. You know, I mean,
a win against Monaco is actually monetarily significant.
Not just that. Atalanta need to beat Barcelona. And if Barcelona are rotate, then Inter can finish second, which is really important in terms of home advantage in the sixth round of 16 quarterfinal, semifinal onwards. That means that we don't play Liverpool until the final. We're on two ends of the bracket. And we, you know, so, yeah.
But would we draw potentially Man City in that scenario?
I can't. It depends on where they finish. I mean, it's not even certain that they're probably going to make it like 90%. But, you know, they have to win. And it wouldn't, you know, we don't know. Like, you know, they're not having the greatest of seasons. But regardless, I don't think we play them in the round of 16. I think we have a different role. But regardless, we'll see what happens. But I want Inter to win that game, and I want Atalanta to win theirs, because I I think Milan are definitely going to beat Dinamo, so they're going to be on 18 points. Atalanta on 17 if they beat Barcelona. We're on 16. We win that, we're on 19. So essentially, it could be a situation where we're second and third, and that means we probably play Milan in the semis again or something. Last time I checked, I'm not sure. So
cakewalk.
Regardless. Yeah, like that would be
huge.
Euro derby. Yeah.
Touching on the third goal here, Zielinski plays Lautaro over the top. Lautaro does just a super clever and super well-placed back heel into Dumfries, who takes it into the box and is able to slot it home. Sharma tweeted, first half of the season, Di Marco and Thuram were the MVPs. This start of the second half of the season, it seems like Lautaro and Dumfries are the MVP. So I have to ask you both here. Marco Messina, is he correct in saying Bellanova and Cambiasso are better right wing backs in Serie A than Denzel Dumfries?
I think you answered your own question by saying who asked that question. Stated those two names. I think you pretty much know where I stand. Top three. I mean, what has he not watched Cambiasso the last few weeks, where he's been absolutely dreadful? I don't know. Belanova, as much as I like him and as much as I wanted him to stay and us to sell Dumfries at that time, I haven't noticed Belanova doing too much with Atalanta. As much as I want him to have an impact and be an influential player there, mostly for the national team, you know, to be able to carry that over, what has he been doing? You cannot look at Denzel Dumfries and be objective, objectively speak, you can't look at him and say, yeah, no, he hasn't been the best player in Serie A. Like, a right wing back.
Yeah.
As much as I hated the man, and as many mistakes, the last, I would say, month and a half, he has been a different player. He really has. I don't know if, like, now all the stress from the contract fully is off of him, and he's like, now I could play freely without anything clouding my mind, without anything hanging over me. The finishing, the passing, the aggressiveness, the way he's tracked back and played, you know, defensively.
The physicality.
Phenomenal.
For me, look, my position, my view on Dumfries has really not changed, in the sense that we know he's a technically limited player. We all know that. It's obvious. He knows it. We know it. But the way that you talk about mental strength, you talk about putting yourself at the service of the team, sacrificing yourself. You talk about aerially, you talk about determination, willpower, work ethic, physicality. And then you look at the output. Look,
the output is Vlahovic is sitting on 7 goals this season. Dumfries is on 6.
In the league, but 8 in the overall league. In all competitions.
Yeah.
Like, this is the thing. Denzel Dumfries, you have to be a liar or a football illiterate if you don't understand that, if you refuse to acknowledge that Denzel Dumfries is by far the best wide wing back on either side of the Serie A this season based on performance. I would argue, based on performance, he's top 3 in the world this season. He's having a dream season. He's having the best season of his life. But to in that situation, talk about a cambiasso who's making people miserable at a Juve that is awful, and to talk about a Belanova that can't even bench Zappacosta, that's dumb. That's genuinely dumb. And I don't, like, I mean dumb in the serious sense of the word. That's a stupid thing to say. But if we're talking about ability, technical ability, that's a different thing. But you can't say something, you can't argue that, because then you're just, you know, immunized to facts. Because the facts, look at how he's played. He's having the season of his life. He's been by far the best wing back in the Serie A. I don't think anyone comes close to him. I mean, it's just second to none. And the thing that keeps, this guy keeps impressing me is his mental strength. Like, that guy, his dedication and mental strength is, he's one of the most.
The scowl on his face when he's playing is really. Really, it's something. Like,
no, but the mental strength. That's the only aspect of his game that is world class, in my opinion. He's unbreakable mentally. He is, like, this is the reason he was a captain, and he has been a captain at all clubs that he's been. He's a leader, you know. He leads by example. Even if he messes up, even if he does mistakes, he will fight to the death to win that ball back, and it doesn't faze him. And I love that about a player. You know, so it's you got to give credit where credit is due. He's not a technical player. He's never going to be a technical player, but the output and the way that he's adapting to Inter's, how Inter want him to play. Come on, like, let's be honest.
All right, 55 minutes in. Let's touch on one more thing from this game, and then we'll get into questions from the listeners. Nima, I have to ask you here. Sorry, Johnny, but. Taremi, does it matter that it was a penalty? Don't mute.
No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Does it matter that it was a penalty that he got this goal on?
No. Yeah. I think what mattered is that he breaks his duck in the Serie A, and that this talking point ends. And that, you know, we all know that strikers, when they score, they get into the swing of things and their confidence improves and stuff like that. It was very important for him to break his duck. And it was important for him to, because Inter need to rotate and they need to have all their strikers working right now. And if it's a Taremi whose confidence is improves, because I think it's a mental thing with him more than anything. And I think it's going to be good for Inter. But and especially now when we're playing every 3 days, this next week is like, it's super important. It's make or break, like Inzaghi said. For me, this week is it. Like, you win against Monaco and then Milan. You know,
and he has to be getting that start against Monaco, correct?
That's the thing. You expect him to do that. And you expect him to be important in that game. And if he can score 2 games in a row, you know, then you build confidence. It's in the past. And that's good for Inter. It's like the Fratesi situation. They've been through that. Now they've came out stronger. These kinds of things, they build groups. They build like character in a dressing room where people trust each other. And they, you know, he's been through difficulty. We stood by him. Now he's past that. Now he's scoring. Do you know what I mean? Like, this builds team spirit. And you can tell that Inter's team spirit, like with Fratesi, you saw what Lautaro said after the game with Fratesi. He's fundamentally important for us. I mean, you know, that's how you build a team spirit. And I think when they do stuff like that, when players together go through a difficult rough patch, that builds team spirit and that brings the group together, and it's going to be important moving forward.
The third striker remains up for grabs here, but I think everybody at Inter wants Taremi to make Absolutely. That his own. So hopefully that can continue. All right, let's get into Q&A. There's our couple shout outs. Great game from Bastoni today defensively. Carlos Augusto again is just consistent and solid and a squad player that I think every coach in Serie A would want to have. So yeah, we'll leave it at that. All right, Johnny, at Griffo Gaming, does the high age of the squad worry you? The fact that Darmian, Acerbi, Mkhitaryan, Sommer, and then a couple of the fringe players will be going on in the next 2 seasons could be expensive to replace.
I'm not worried about the price so much. I am worried about the age being a factor. You know, everyone is getting older, of course. We see how it's affecting Acerbi this season. I mean, we also don't know how his battle with cancer could be making this even harder to, you know, recover from an injury and stuff. I don't know the physical toll that takes on someone. I can only imagine. But, you know, that doesn't bode well. Darmian being older, although they're still performing at a high level, you do have to be a little concerned about the age, and hopefully, you know, that's something we can address over the next year or two, bringing in youth that's not more of projects, but more ready to be able to step in and take over starting roles from some of these guys. The way we have, you know, kind of already done with Josep Martinez, you know, I think you are prepared for life after Sommer, and now you just have to start doing it at other positions as well.
Like a Paz and like a Ricci, who are young in every sense of the word, but also,
and don't forget Sucic, know how to play, right?
Let's not
forget my Croatian brother. Okay, let's show and respect.
Sucic. Yeah. All right, Nima, at the Inter dude, how are we feeling going into the match against Milan? You think the players that have started 2025 strong will keep it going against them? Also, any news on Hakan coming back soon? Maybe after Monaco, haven't seen any of the news yet.
Yeah, well, Hakan, I mean, from what the Inter are saying, is essentially the goal is to have him start against Milan. That's the goal. And I think we don't need to risk him against Monaco, and I don't think Inzaghi will. There's no need for that. So that's pretty much what it is. If he's fit, he will play against Milan. And I think Acerbi, with Acerbi thing, like I tweeted I think it was a week ago or something. Look, he will always be remembered at Inter for winning 4 important trophies so far, in the sense that he's, you know, the Scudetto in faccia. He'll always be a part of that. He will always be part of that Inter that went to the Champions League final, where he pocketed strikers along the way. I think there's a serious argument to be made that season Francesco Acerbi was the best central defender in the world, like in the Champions. He was by far the best central defender defensively in the Champions League. I mean, he pocketed Osimhen, he pocketed Haaland, he pocketed everyone. So, you know, I think it's time to move on. I mean, he's 37. He's not getting any younger. And like Gianni said, he doesn't have cancer now that we know. Hopefully he doesn't ever get that again. But he has had it in the past. And that does take a toll on your body. And the older you get, you break down. And I just think he will always be remembered fondly at Inter. I just think it's time to part ways now with him.
How are you feeling heading into Milan, by the way?
I'm much happier now than I was three days ago, because I saw an Inter that reacted. You know, I saw an Inter that today looked like you can add this to the Hellas and City and Arsenal and Atalanta games. It was an Inter that actually dominated and imposed themselves from start to finish and didn't stress and didn't fret. And that's really important. So I'm much more calmer now. But the key now is Monaco. Monaco at home, because I don't know if the stats back it up. I think they do. But Inter at home this season don't play as well as they do away.
They don't.
And I think that's a problem. We have two games now where we're kind of at home, and I want to see two good performances there.
They're first in the league considering just away fixtures, and they're fourth in the league considering just home fixtures.
There you go. Yep. There you go.
Yep. Johnny, at a person 1352, seeing how Lautaro is playing now compared to how he did at the start of the season, do we just have to accept that he will never be able to have a consistent goal-scoring season?
I mean, he had a consistent goal-scoring season last season.
Yeah,
like,
months of the season, it felt like the numbers dropped off a little bit.
Okay, the numbers dropped off a little bit, but he still won top goal scorer in Serie A and had a phenomenal season. Like, I do think that he will have lulls throughout a season. I don't think he'll ever be scoring a goal every single game. Like, he won't break, you know, Higuain's, you know, single season goal tally. I mean, but
that's not who he is. That's fine.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, how many teams currently really just rely on one striker only to bag, or one person, let's not even say one strike, one person to bag all their goals? You know, like, I don't know. I don't think that's a part of his game, like Nima said, but I also don't think, I do think that he is a consistent player. For them, this year was abnormally bad. I don't know. That's why I said, you know, did he have a knock that we didn't know about that he was dealing with and struggling with? Like, look at the difference. Like, now he's sharper. He's quicker. His finishing is unbelievable. Like, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility for it to have been something that, you know, maybe was just a little lingering thing that it took him a little while to be able to recover from. And now he's back to his best. So,
also, can we please cut the guy some slack? Since the pandemic, I don't think him. Is there any footballer more than him and Barella who has played more football matches?
It's the two of them. Yeah.
I mean, can we give the guy some, like, you know, like, they need, and think about it, summer with the Club World Cup, and then next year the World Cup, like,
and like, just look like,
they have not had a break for 6 years.
It's too, like, much.
No offense to the players of the early 90s or late 90s even, but like, can you imagine, you know, R9 playing this many games in a season, or Zidane playing this many games in a season? Yeah, like, these guys would be, I'm not saying they weren't fantastic, you know, physical shape, but I think even they would be showing signs of, you know, not being able to perform week in and week out because of the condensed, you know, fixture list for these guys nowadays. Like, as much as I love, you know, the Adrianos and the Tottis and you know, whoever else, Pirlo, I don't know if they would be able to play this many games and stay at that elite level, is what I'm saying. Like, I'm not saying they wouldn't perform, but to stay week in and week out continuously being, you know, the best in the game, I don't know if it would be possible, because it's just too many games.
It really is. It really is. And it's, the injuries show that as well. The ACLs.
The ACLs, I mean,
it's just like, it's not, they have to do something. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I said it on our pod as well, on the Italian Football Podcast, that look, I'm scared for someone's life. I think somewhat like something horrible. It's not normal. This isn't ice hockey. It's a different, it's football. It's a way different dynamic, the way you move, and playing 60, 70 games every single year, year in, year out, that burns people out. Like, it just does. You know, they're not made of steel. They're made of flesh and blood. And
we've also seen a ton of injuries in this level of this amount of fixtures. It's still a fairly small sample size. Like, show me what things are going to look like in 5 years consecutive of this level of minutes on these legs. And we've already seen the impact.
But at that point, too, it's like, yeah, but at that point, too, like the quality of games you're going to see is going to take a huge dip. Like it's just going to be, you're not going to be seeing elite football. You're going to see a bunch of boring nil-nil games because guys are just too tired to really put any effort into chasing a victory. If it's just, you know, oh, well, we have, you know, this group locked up or whatever. We're in the top eight of the Champions League. We could settle for a draw here. Like, we, who cares about seeding? We're still top eight. We avoid that first knockout phase. We're good. You know, like, it's going to affect the game. And you see it already with the quality of players from even 20 years ago to the quality of players we have now. And I'm not saying it's just because of the fixture list, but it's just not the same level of competition that it was. And like, I think back to what I was seeing in derbies back in, you know, 05, 06, and the level of play from both squads, whether it was Juve or Milan, and, you know, going up against Inter was beautiful. It's not that level anymore. I mean, just look at Juve now. You think, you know, if they saw themselves even 20 years ago, or what they would see themselves now, I mean, from 20 years ago, like, they would be happy with this performances? You know, I don't think so.
At one point, Inter had the likes of Vieri, Adriano, Recoba, Martins, all in the same squad. You'd be lucky if you found that, and Julio Cruz, you'd be lucky if you found that quality of depth in Serie A, not just on one team, just in Serie A at this point.
Yeah, and it's sad that this is what the game is kind of trending towards. If, you know, eventually you're going to just have people who are just all about pace and power, and there's going to be no beauty in the game if we just keep going down this route.
Yeah.
Thank you. 100%.
Agreed. All right, Nima, at Peter Jordan or at Retep Nadro, two-part question. Does TJ need to go, and will we make a signing before the end of the month?
I think if he leaves, they will try to bring someone in on loan, yeah. I think so.
At wing back or at center back?
Yeah, wing back. I think wing back. I think so. I think it's a shame. I feel bad for him because that leg fracture really screwed up his career at Inter. It feels like he really didn't get a fair chance because of that. It screwed everything up. And it's a shame because he was an exciting player when he was at Club Brugge, and he was one of those players where you're like thinking, this is an interesting one, you know? But yeah, it is what it is. Timing is everything in life. But hopefully if he goes on loan, I mean, you also, look, if he goes to a Torino or if he goes to Roma and he plays well and he finds his mojo and he does well, then, you know, who knows what happens in the summer, right?
Yeah, hopefully not, for his sake, not a Valentin Lazzaro kind of career trajectory, which is what he's trending towards. All right, Johnny, last question here before we wrap up. At John_FC66. Do you think we'll play a strong starting 11 versus Monaco in the midweek fixture?
I think so. I think that they want to guarantee, you know, finishing top eight to avoid that extra two matches, you know, in the knockout stage, in the round of 32, however you want to look at it. And maybe not the strongest starting 11, but I think it'll be a strong starting 11. So.
Can I just say something? I just had a stat sent to me. The last seven away games Inter have had in the Serie A is 7 games, 7 wins, 23 goals scored, 0 conceded. Roma Inter 0-1, Empoli Inter 0-3, Verona Inter 0-5, Lazio Inter 0-6, Cagliari Inter 0-3, Venezia Inter 0-1, Lecce Inter 0-4. We're an away team.
That's it. Burn down the San Siro immediately.
Exactly. Move everything out of it. Play every game away.
We're going to play at Bergamo forever now.
They have a plus 24 goal differential in away fixtures.
Mental.
That's absurd. 7
of which come, 23 of which come from the last 7 games away. It's crazy.
That's absurd. Actually, we do have one more. We did get a speak pipe here from a new listener, Frank Sinopoli. So let me go ahead and play this here.
What's up, Alessandro, Johnny? This is Frank from Toronto. Just finished watching the game, and man, was that awesome or what? everybody doing their job. Fratesi looking good on his runs. He was unlucky with that offside. Lauti, nice goal. Dumfries, oh my God, that goal was incredible. You know, Taremi gets in there, gets a PK. That's got to be boost for his confidence. The only thing I really got to say was the refereeing was atrocious. Oh my goodness. I don't know what that guy was looking at. But love the show, guys. Seriously, keep it up. Yeah. Forza Inter.
I think Frank summed it up pretty yeah, nicely. I mean, there in 40 seconds.
No notes, nothing to add.
That was the game.
That was the game.
There it is. Frank.
There it is. Thanks, Frank.
Alrighty, Johnny, anything that we need to update the listeners on? We've been throwing out the seeds for this Club World Cup thing, but haven't gotten too much action.
Yeah, not a lot of action. I think it's just going to be you and me sitting in a corner at the stadium, you know, in Seattle. Maybe we'll go to the Starbucks headquarters. I want to go. I definitely want to go.
I know at least one Interisti who lives in Seattle who's going.
I've had a few people reach out to me. That's it. He's leaving the Sounders and he's coming to watch the game with us. I've had a few people reach out privately saying that they're going to one of the matches, and someone even said that they would drive down from Vancouver to go to one if we decide to go up. So I mean, I've already looked up flights. That's probably the biggest plus of living in Vegas is a round trip flight for me would be like $60. So oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah, it's insane. It's like a quick flight from here, and yeah, I've seen 45 on an airline I wouldn't trust, and 65 on an airline I would feel good.
No, it's worth the extra 20.
Yeah, it's worth it to me to get on the plane that I would feel safer on. Yeah, it's just finding tickets, but I guess we'd have to go like aftermarket third party website or something, because yeah, it looks like they're already snatched up. But if I could, really? I don't watch match. Yeah. Oh yeah. Wow. At least the pre-sale is, you know, so.
Okay.
Yeah, alrighty, Nima.
That's it.
You were grateful that you gave us some time here. I think it was a really great episode. So I do need to pass it over to you. You're a busy man. You got a lot going on. Mm-hmm. Tell the listeners where they should be looking for your next content.
Well, I mean, we do the Italian Football Podcast is what we do the most. We do 3-4 pods a week. I mean, next week, this coming week, we're interviewing. Oh, we've got the Monday pod, which is the review, which is the one that our review and preview shows are the ones where we actually go deep. That's why they're like 90 minutes to 120. We want to discuss the league in depth. Juve, Inter, Milan, Napoli, Roma, Lazio, Fiorentina. Like, and Carlo.
Speaking of Lazio and Fiorentina, Fiorentina is currently up 2-0 at the Olimpico.
Wow. Important. No, but it's, you know, we do that, and Carlo gets annoyed with me because I love to talk about the nitty-gritty of the relegation battle more than I enjoy the title race, and he gets so annoyed, and he's like, no, we're not spending 25 minutes talking Cagliari-Lecce. I'm sorry, it's not happening. but we do that, and then of course on Tuesday we have a former Sampdoria and Man United player, I think Lee Sharp, who played with Ariel Ortega under Luciano Spalletti at Sampdoria. We're interviewing him on Tuesday. That'll be out on Tuesday. And then we do a weekly Q&A pod, which is out usually on Wednesdays. And then, of course, the Thursday midweek show where we review the Champions League games and preview the upcoming weekend. And so, yeah, next week it's a four-week episode. It's very, very stressful when it is like that. But it's fun. I love it. I'm so happy for everyone who subscribes and shares and does what it was, because it really is covering Italian football the way I've always wanted to do it.
Yeah, and it's also, like, I feel for true Calcio fans, it's just, like, essential listening. Just essential listening. Like, it covers everything, and we appreciate everything you do, obviously, with Sempre Inter coming on and supporting the Interviews pod, and then Italian Football Podcast is up there for not just culture lovers, but for football fans in general.
Thank you.
Alrighty. In the words of the great Roberto Scarpini, forza ragazzi, forza ragazzi, forza ragazzi.